build the metric, even in 100,000 myriad countless. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one moment of myself.
It's the Buddha, it's the Dharma, it's the Sangha. I want to read a little passage, a very short one, from the Sutra of the Six Patriarchs, the Platform Sutra is also called, and comment on it. A monk named Chi Xing remarked, "Though I have studied Buddhism for 9 years under Grand Master Xin Shao, my mind was not awakened for enlightenment. But as soon as you speak to me," he's addressing the Six Patriarch, "my mind is enlightened. As the question of continuous rebirth is an important one, I wish you would take pity on me and give me instruction as to that question." The Patriarch said, "I understand that your master gives his disciples instruction as to precepts, meditation, and wisdom. Will you please tell me how he defines these terms?" "According to his teaching," replied Chi Xing, "to refrain from all evil action is sila, to practice whatever is good is prajna, and to purify one's mind is jhana." Sila is precepts, prajna is wisdom, jhana is meditation, by the way. "This is the way he teaches us. May I ask what your system is?" The Patriarch replied, "If I should tell you that I had a system of jhana, a system of meditation, to transmit to others, I would be deceiving you. What I try to do to my disciples is to liberate them from their own bondage by such device as each case requires. To use a name, which after all is nothing but a makeshift, it may be called samadhi." Another name for meditation, really. "The way your master teaches sila, jhana, and prajna is wonderful, but my way is different." The monk asked, "How can it be different, sir, when there is only one form of sila, jhana, and prajna?" "The teaching of your master," replied the Patriarch, "is for the guidance of the general followers of Mahayana. My teaching is for the more advanced followers. It is because some realize the Dharma quicker and deeper than others that there is a difference of interpretation. Listen while I explain and see if you think my instruction is the same as his. In expounding the Dharma, I do not deviate from the authority of my own spiritual intuition. To do otherwise would indicate that the expositor's Buddha nature was obscured and that he was competent to teach only the phenomenal side, that is, the appearance, the more external side of the Dharma. The true teaching of sila, jhana, and prajna should be based on the principle that the functions of all things derived its virtue from its essence, from Buddha nature. He who has realized Buddha nature may dispense with such doctrines as enlightenment, nirvana, and knowledge of emancipation. It is only those who do not possess any single system of meditation or of teaching who can formulate all systems." Remember, Matthew used to speak of the kaleidoscopic mind. That's what he's speaking of here. "Who can make use of all teachings. And they who understand this may rightly use such terms as buddhakaya, bodhi, nirvana, knowledge of emancipation, etc. To those who have realized Buddha nature, it makes no difference whether they formulate all systems of jhana or dispense with all of them. As circumstances arise, they take appropriate action. They give suitable answers according to the varying temperament of their questioner. The reason why I chose this passage to talk about is this key sentence: "In expounding the Dharma, I do not deviate from the authority of my intuitive mind, the authority of my own spiritual intuition." highlighted in this text, the sentence, the true teaching of Sila, Jhana, and Prajna, in other words, the true teaching of the Dharma, should be based on the principle that the function of all things derives its virtue from its essence. That's a mouthful. The function of all things derives its virtue from its essence. That is, what is truly good in anything is that which derives from Buddha nature. Not just the appearance of good, as the world understands it, or even as most religious people understand it. We're not talking about external appearances here. But good in this sense is that good which lies beyond good and evil in the dualistic worldly sense. That good which leads to the cessation of suffering. That good which originates within and returns to the eternal. That good which is no one's possession, which belongs to and is of the eternal. Now, the reason why I chose this to talk about was to simply extrapolate a little bit in this context. What the master is speaking of is his capacity to teach, not from his head, but from directly from the heart, direct reliance upon Buddha nature, and a trust in that which comes from the heart, however it may appear to the worldly mind, the worldly eye. But if we extrapolate a little bit, you can see that what's really being talked about is our very innate capacity, not just the capacity of a few special people, but the capacity that everyone has to act and live from the heart. If we think more deeply than we usually do about what teaching is, we think of it in terms of living from the heart, and above everything else, the example of living from the heart as being the essential teaching. Sometimes it manifests in words, most of the time it does not. Then you can see what I'm thinking of here. Notice that the master is not running down the teacher of the monk who's come to question him. He's simply saying that there's some people who are more ready for the more direct teaching than others. And the masters suit their means of teaching and what they emphasize to the needs of the people who come to them. The reason why we meditate is not so that we can have an intellectual understanding that leads to liberation. It's because no intellectual understanding will lead to liberation. It is not so that we can know what's right or wrong with the world. Much less so that we can set the world right where it is wrong. We do our meditation for the sake of the meditation itself. And what is the meditation? When you sit in meditation, in a formal practice, you're trying to sit from the heart. You're trying to sit with the heart opened to the eternal. You're told when you start to meditate, when you're learning to meditate, starting the practice, you allow your thoughts and your feelings to come and go. You don't allow your thoughts and feelings to come and go so that you can get the right thoughts and the right feelings. You allow your thoughts and feelings to come and go because you can live from a place that's deeper than the transitory. You can take refuge in a place within yourself that's deeper than the transitory. And thoughts and feelings, perceptions, every aspect of our body and mind is transitory. We have a formal practice of contemplation or meditation to simply take refuge in our true self. And to help us in every aspect of our daily life harmonize with our true self. Similarly, we have precepts for the same reason. The precepts are aids to doing the same thing. And all the teachings on karma, rebirth, no self, the noble truths, the Buddha nature itself, all these teachings are aids to this. So many people get stuck in the end fiddling with the aids and don't realize that the aids are supposed to be helping you actually just do the essential thing. Then the question arises for many people, well, why can't I seem to do the essential thing? And the answer to that is, well, how do you know you're not? If one would just sit still in the place of that question and let the whole question of whether one can or not fall away, what is left then? We hunger for reassurance that we're getting it right. Precisely in the degree to which we can't stop judging ourselves. Master used to say, you never know when you're enlightened, you only know when you're not. peculiar thing about this, that you actually don't need to know that you're getting it right in order to get it right. This is why the disciple cannot assess his or her own progress. Sometimes you can think you're making progress and you can be fooling yourself. Sometimes you can think that you're doing terribly and you're actually making progress. When Dogen says that the harmonization of body and mind is the hardest path of all to follow, this is why. And yet, it's the only one that actually works in actual fact. The degree of difficulty experienced in the doing of it is exactly proportional to the degree of judgment of ourselves. I've been speaking a good deal lately to the community here about Sangha, contrition. I don't know why it is that Sangha so often gets lost in the shuffle in the teaching of Dharma. But Sangha is actually and absolutely critical. It is a fulcrum which the lever of the eternal can use to help loosen up and convert that problem of self-judgment. Sangha is where we admit to ourselves what isn't working. So that we can allow the eternal to show us and help us with what does work. As we gradually let go of what doesn't work, we're thrown back upon pure faith in that intuitive capacity that we all possess. No one has more of it than anyone else. It's just that most people don't actualize it very much, don't give themselves the opportunity to actualize it very much. We just get too busy among external things. And among our own ideas about what needs to be done or what has to be done. And we forget to just be still and let it all go. And just accept what is. just accept what is. From that place, we can act upon our spiritual intuition. We can act directly. We can act in direct reliance upon Buddha nature. When we're getting it right, most of the time we won't know. Why should we need to know when we're getting it right? If you think about it, we need to know when we're not getting it right. So the more we're getting it right, here's the funny thing, the more we're getting it right, the more acutely aware we become of when we're not getting it right. And the more the glitches stand out. The person who thinks he's always getting it right is just simply fooling himself. As is the person who thinks that he can't get it right. Expounding the Dharma, I do not deviate from the authority of my own intuitive mind, my own Buddha nature, is what the text says. I do not deviate from the authority of my own Buddha nature. It is that authority from whence came all the essential teachings of Buddhism that all Buddhists have in common, that all Buddhist schools have in common. It is that authority that the Four Noble Truths came from. It is that authority that the precepts came from. It is the authority both of pure intuition and the authority of genuine full spiritual experience. If we think we do not have the capacity to live from this place, then we don't even try. If we think that living from this place comes easily, then we have no idea the actual price you have to pay to really do it. This is one of the problems with New Age pseudo-religion, kind of New Age psychology. They borrow the treasure of others and then try to sell it in a way that makes it sound glib and easy. And it's anything but. To get this right is a work of a lifetime and takes a lot of serious meditation practice. If people think they can get it right without serious practice of meditation, without training in the context of a Sangha, without the discipline of training, They're fooling themselves. And it can be done.